with this worldwide news update. U.S. President Donald Trump's top diplomat and his main spokesperson on Wednesday walked back the idea that he wants the permanent relocation of Palestinians from Gaza. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio and White House spokeswoman Caroline Leavitt compare Gaza to a demolition site, the scene of a natural disaster, and say the president's generously offered to rebuild it.
In the interim, obviously, people are going to have to live somewhere while you're rebuilding it.
The president has made it clear that they need to be temporarily relocated out of Gaza.
That's not what the president said yesterday.
If we can get a beautiful area to resettle people permanently in nice homes.
American allies and Republican lawmakers pushed back on his suggestion that the U.S. own Gaza. Palestinians are rejecting calls for even a temporary move, worrying if they leave, they'll never be let back in. Sagar Magani, Washington.
President Trump's proposal that the U.S. take over the Gaza Strip has been swiftly rejected and denounced by American allies and adversaries alike. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Saudi Arabia weighed in quickly, noting the kingdom's long call for an independent Palestinian state was a firm, steadfast, and unwavering position. Similarly, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese told reporters nothing has changed.
The Australian government support and a bipartisan basis, a two-state solution in the Middle East.
Rafah resident Taysir al-Siyam told the AP, Trump's remarks are wrong. We'll remain in our homes and on our land. We will not leave, not to Egypt, nor anywhere else. Nothing worse can happen to us than what has already happened. I'm Karen Chamas.
This is VOA News. U.S. aid workers abroad are scrambling to pack up households after the Trump administration abruptly pulled almost all agency staffers off the job and out of the field. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
One USAID contractor working in an often violent region in the Middle East speaks of waking up one morning earlier this week and being blocked from access to government email and other systems. And the person says an emergency panic button app on their smartphone had been wiped off, putting the contractor and family in danger because they weren't able to reach the U.S. government for help if needed. The Trump administration had assured that the U.S. government would bring agency workers home safely within 30 days, but some fear being stranded in the field and left to make their own way back. Donna Warder, Washington.
A U.S. federal judge on Wednesday ordered a second nationwide pause on President Trump's executive order seeking to end birthright citizenship for anyone born in the United States to someone in the country illegally. U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman said no court in the country has endorsed the Trump administration's interpretation of the 14th Amendment. This court will not be the first. Trump's birthright citizenship order was already on temporary hold because of a separate suit brought by four states where a judge called it blatantly unconstitutional. 22 states in total, as well as other organizations, have sued to try to stop the executive action. The Trump administration asserts children of non-citizens are not subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. and therefore not entitled to citizenship. President Trump signed an executive order on Wednesday intended to ban transgender athletes from participating in girls' and women's sports. The order gives federal agencies wide latitude to ensure entities that receive federal funding abide by Title IX in alignment with the Trump administration's view, which interprets sex as the gender someone was assigned at birth. Title IX prohibits sexual discrimination in schools, meaning any school found in violation could potentially be ineligible for federal funding. It is the latest aggressive shift by the Republican president's second administration in how the government views transgender people and their rights. Trump has already ordered the government to define sex as only male or female. The latest order was condemned by trans rights advocates, including the National Women's Law Center. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, VOAnews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
The world reacts to Donald Trump's plan for the U.S. to own Gaza.
We shall remain steadfast in our homeland. We will not leave here. We've got one option only, live or die here.
A look at the Democratic opposition to the president.
We will not shut up. We will stand up. We will speak up. We will rise up.
And authorities have discovered a secret tunnel connecting Mexico with the United States.
Authorities believe this underground route was used to smuggle both migrants and drugs from Mexico to the United States.
Today is Thursday, February 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe. And I'm Steve Karish. We begin tonight in Israel. As the Middle East woke up on Wednesday to U.S. President Donald Trump's stunning announcement on Tuesday night that the United States seeks to own the Gaza Strip.
Worldwide reaction was swift to Trump's suggestion that the United States take over the Gaza Strip and send the nearly 2 million Palestinians who live there somewhere else. The plan has shocked both Israelis and Palestinians, and while some Israelis welcome the idea, Palestinians categorically reject it. Linda Granstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
President Donald Trump dropped his bombshell about the future of Gaza at a joint news conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House Tuesday.
Everybody I've spoken to loves the idea of the United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent.
Trump said the 2 million Palestinians will be resettled elsewhere. For some, it is a dream come true. Bezalel Smotrich is Israel's finance minister.
The plan presented yesterday by U.S. President Donald Trump is the true response to October 7th. Those who carried out the worst massacre on our land will find themselves losing their land forever.
Israeli analysts said Trump's idea resonates with hardliners in Israel. Amos Asael is a fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem.
It's only natural for them to be this idea's cheerleaders because they think in messianic terms, in terms of colossal solutions and transitions and transformations, all of which are not the way the Middle East is structured.
He says Israelis and Palestinians need to be patient.
You want change, you have to work very patiently over many years with many participants, or all you'll have is yet more violence and destruction and despair.
Hamas spokesman Sami Abu Zuhri called Trump's remarks ridiculous and absurd, adding that any ideas of this kind are, quote, a recipe for creating chaos and tension in the region. In Gaza, Palestinians say that despite the large-scale destruction, they have no intention of leaving. Ahmed Halassa is a resident of Gaza City.
I am Gazan. My father and grandfather were from here. We are true Gazans. So they can do whatever they want to do. We shall remain steadfast in our homeland. We will not leave here. We've got one option only, live or die here.
Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian envoy to the United Nations, offered his own solution.
Our country and our home is the Gaza Strip. It's part of Palestine. We have no home. For those who want to send them to a happy, nice place, let them go back, you know, to their original homes inside Israel. There are nice places there, and they will be happy to return to these places.
It is not clear how President Trump's ideas will influence talks on a permanent ceasefire in Gaza set to begin this week in Qatar. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Elsewhere in the world, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, China, and key European allies said they were opposed to Trump's Gaza takeover proposal. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has more on how countries instead back a two-state solution for peace in the region.
More than 500,000 Palestinians, almost a quarter of the population, have crossed into northern Gaza. They're defiant in the face of President Donald Trump's announcement on Tuesday that the U.S. will take over the Palestinian enclave.
Trump can dream on if he thinks he can displace or expel us.
On Tuesday, Trump was asked if he would send American troops to seize Gaza.
As far as Gaza is concerned, we'll do what is necessary. If it's necessary, we'll do that. We're going to take over that piece.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt clarified his remarks Wednesday.
But that does not mean boots on the ground in Gaza. It does not mean American taxpayers will be funding this effort. It means Donald Trump, who is the best deal maker on the planet, is going to strike a deal with our partners in the region.
But partners in the region condemn the idea, including Jordan and Egypt, the two neighboring countries Trump is pushing to accept Palestinians. Jordan's King Abdullah met Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Amman Wednesday, the same day that top Palestinian officials met Egypt's foreign minister in Cairo. They stressed the need for a two-state solution. So did United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
It is vital to stay true to the bedrock of international law. It is essential to avoid any form of ethnic cleansing.
Saudi Arabia, the geopolitical and cultural leader of the Arab world, said on state TV that their support for Palestinian statehood is, quote, firm, steadfast, and unwavering.
This firm position is not subject to negotiation or outbidding.
The statement contradicts Trump's claim on Tuesday that the Saudis are not demanding a Palestinian homeland.
Saudi Arabia is going to be very helpful, and they have been very helpful. They want peace in the Middle East.
The Saudis had been negotiating with the Biden administration to recognize Israel in exchange for a security and energy pact. But talks were halted by Hamas' October 7, 2023 attack and Israel's counteroffensive. A deal with the Saudis would have expanded the Trump-brokered 2020 Abraham Accords that normalized ties between Israel and Arab countries. Riyadh will be more cautious, at least for now.
Mohammed bin Salman at the moment doesn't see any kind of immediate benefit for him to go ahead with President Trump's plan, which is, by the way, outrageous, and the whole world seems to be against it.
That includes adversaries such as China and Russia, and allies including Germany, France, and Britain.
They must be allowed home. They must be allowed to rebuild, and we should be with them in that rebuild on the way to a two-state solution.
The White House now says Trump's plan is to only temporarily relocate Palestinians.
It's not a livable place for any human being. And I think it's actually quite evil to suggest that people should live in such dire conditions.
Levitt said Trump will speak with regional leaders in the coming days. Meanwhile, demonstrators gathered in cities across the U.S. to protest Trump's early actions, including on Gaza. Patsy Dakuswara, Viewing News, Washington.
As we've heard, Trump's controversial plan to relocate hundreds of thousands of Palestinians so that the U.S. can redevelop the Gaza Strip has raised objections worldwide. But what are the other options?
For more, I'm joined by Amnon Aaron, Professor of International Politics of the Middle East at City St. George's University of London. What did you see on Tuesday night? What did President Trump say? What were your thoughts?
Well, I think, first of all, my thoughts were that there's one thing that everybody seems to agree on, and that is that the Gaza Strip is currently inhabitable. And that is something that both the detractors and the supporters of this plan seem to agree on. The second thing that I saw is that President Trump has effectively ruled out any return to what was effectively the diplomatic formula since the early 90s. In other words, you first make peace between Israel and the Palestinians, and then you try to expand it.
Trump would say that peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians probably isn't possible, so let's find another way, and it looks like that's what he's doing. What do you say to that?
Well, I think basically he's basically almost skirting around it. And this is, again, goes back to what he did in 2020. His approach is what you might call an outside-in approach. So he starts from the outer circle of the Arab-Israeli conflict. In other words, let's have peace with between Gulf states and Israel, obviously Saudi Arabia now in Israel, and if you like, bypass the whole question of the Palestinians. If we could get a Palestinian peace, that was in 2020, okay, so be it. But if not, we just pass over it. At this point, I think he's basically concluded that there is no possibility to reach peace between Israel and the Palestinians. And therefore, he has proposed this very radical solution that he has suggested, or not suggested, advocated very forcefully in this press conference.
If Gaza were to become, what did he call it, a Riviera of the Middle East,
yeah,
would the ends justify the means, do you think?
I think that, in my mind, I think there are other possibilities that have not been explored. And I think, in the sense that this is almost the first option that is now being decided upon, I think that, you know, certainly forcefully moving 1.8 million people, log, stock and barrel, here, I do not think that the end would have sort of justified the means. I still firmly believe that actually, you know, a better idea would have been some sort of statehood for the Palestinians, but not the one that has been talked about in the last 30 years, but rather something that actually involves additional regional resources that would augment what you cannot give currently the Palestinians. For example, I think it would make much more sense to lease land from Egypt to the Palestinians for 100 years and expand the territory rather than, you know, shift around 1.8 million people. I think there are ways to, you know, to get Palestinians to vote, which, again, would be able to realize their political aspirations without, again, forcefully moving 1.8 million Palestinians. Having said all of that, and I think this is really the key issue that no expert can really, you know, give an accurate answer without going to Gaza Strip, I think, you know, we have not yet heard, you know, I think Palestinians who are not under duress would need to make that decision in the end. So I think the Trump administration has jumped to an extreme proposal without seriously exploring other and potentially more viable options that would not have involved the resettling or, some would argue, forced displacement of 1.8 million Palestinians. And I think in that sense, the way things stand now, the ends do not justify the means as they are now.
1.8 million people in this land, which is by all accounts devastated, the infrastructure, the housing, the buildings completely ruined. Hamas is, I don't know, are they capable of governing effectively, peacefully?
I do not think so. I do not think Hamas currently has the capacity in the long run to govern the Gaza Strip.
So who can? Who can step in?
That is exactly the issue that we return to. The Gaza Strip is currently inhabitable, and therefore there have to be very credible proposals to how to act to first of all make it governable again. And I think the term reconstruction is incorrect. We're talking here about rebuilding, not reconstructing. Now the estimate here is that this will take between 5 and 15 years. So Hamas cannot pull it off on its own. This has to be a very concerted international effort. And again, going back to your previous questions about the ends and the means, I would think that a demilitarized Gaza Strip, together with a very serious concerted international effort that could rebuild the area, something that would maybe look similar to, you know, what we had after World War II with the Marshall Plan, that would actually be a much more feasible and viable plan than the idea of resettling 1.8 million Palestinians to territories and areas that at the moment have not been yet clearly identified.
Amnon Aran is author of Israeli Foreign Policy Since the End of the Cold War. He's a professor of international politics of the Middle East at the City St. George's University of London. Professor Aran, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. On Wednesday, President Trump signed an executive order designed to prevent transgender athletes from participating in girls' or women's sports. The order gives federal agencies wide latitude to ensure entities that receive federal funding abide by Title IX in alignment with the administration's view, which interprets sex as the gender someone was assigned at birth. It is the administration's latest shift in how the government deals with transgender people and their rights. Trump has already signed an order declaring there are only two sexes, male and female.
A spokesperson says President Javier Milei has ordered Argentina's withdrawal from the World Health Organization due to profound differences with the UN agency. Milei's action echoes that of his ally Trump, who began the process of pulling the United States out of the WHO on his first day back in office last month. The World Health Organization said it was looking into Argentina's announcement. The loss of another member country will further fracture cooperation in global health.
A project to establish a court to prosecute the Russian leaders who orchestrated the invasion of Ukraine has taken a major step forward with an announcement from a group of international organizations, including the European Union and the Council of Europe, working together with Ukraine. The move to create a special tribunal aims to fill a void created by limitations on the International Criminal Court. While the ICC can go after Russian nationals for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity, it cannot prosecute Russians for orchestrating the invasion itself.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strobe. A tunnel under the Rio Grande connecting Mexico with the U.S. has been shut down. That story in a few minutes.
Now, though, congressional Democratic leadership warned President Donald Trump this week that they will use upcoming government funding talks as leverage to fight the administration's changes at U.S. government agencies, such as the U.S. Agency for International Development. That's the nation's lead provider of humanitarian aid overseas. VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson, has the story.
From protecting Amazon rainforests to caring for Myanmar refugees and housing Ukrainians fleeing the war against Russia, the absence of U.S. assistance is being felt around the world. In Washington this week, Democratic lawmakers protested outside the now closed headquarters of the lead U.S. aid agency and outside the U.S. Capitol. Cory Booker is a Democratic senator.
We will fight their violations of separation of powers. We will fight their violations of our Constitution of the United States of America. We will not shut up. We will stand up. We will speak up. We will rise up.
Earlier this week, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, was moved under the control of Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and almost all its employees put on leave, following an executive order from President Donald Trump freezing U.S. foreign assistance pending review. Jonathan Jackson is a Democratic congressman.
Now we're seeing the most powerful man in the world, Donald J. Trump, and we're seeing the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, now take money and food from the poorest woman and the poorest man on earth.
Congressional Republicans say Trump is exercising broad presidential authority to reevaluate government agencies. Trump is accomplishing this through Elon Musk, a multi-billionaire whom he put in charge of the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, whose aim is to reduce federal spending. John Thune is Senate Majority Leader.
I don't think they're closing an agency, but I do think they have the right to review funding and how those decisions are made and what priorities are being funded. I think that's probably true of any administration when they come in. There are lots of programs authorized and funded through that agency, some of which I think are operating the way in which they were intended, some which aren't.
One analyst told VOA the situation is unprecedented in the United States. Claire Finkelstein is a professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania.
Arguably, it's a real violation of separation of powers for the executive branch to try to shut down agencies completely that Congress has brought into existence and that Congress endows and appropriates funds for, even if the executive branch has quite a lot of discretion with regard to how to operationalize those funds and how the agency is going to function.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Tuesday he's supportive of efforts to eliminate fraud and abuse, but criticized the speed and secrecy of the process.
Whatever DOGE is doing, it's not democracy. We know what democracy's like. It's out in the open. It's not secret.
Democrats have pledged to stall votes on Trump's cabinet nominees and leverage their votes on a new government spending bill to protest the changes at USAID. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
After the recent discovery of a clandestine tunnel connecting the U.S. and Mexican cities of El Paso and Juarez, Mexican authorities have launched an operation to uncover other illegal underground passages. Veronica Villafañe narrates this report for us by Cesar Contreras.
The tunnel under the Rio Grande River is a little over a meter wide and nearly 2 meters high. It connects with a storm sewer system and is equipped with lighting and ventilation. General José Lemus Cisneros is the Ciudad Juárez military garrison commander.
It is lined with wooden beams, as you will be able to see. It has beams, it has wood to prevent collapses.
Authorities believe this underground route was used to smuggle both migrants and drugs from Mexico to the United States. U.S. Border Patrol agents in El Paso discovered the tunnel on January 9th during an inspection of a storm drain and began sealing it on the northern side of the border a week later. Mexican authorities have started closing the tunnel on their end and say they're looking for others. Again, General Lemus Cisneros.
We have increased search activities to detect other tunnels, if there are any, and our presence will be maintained permanently.
The Mexican government has increased patrols at strategic points in Juarez to prevent migrants from becoming trapped in tunnels or falling victim to human traffickers as they attempt to cross the border illegally. Gilberto Loya is the Chihuahua Public Safety Director.
Our main purpose is to protect migrants and ensure they don't risk their lives trying to enter the United States illegally. However, after the discovery of this tunnel, we're also focused on searching for other tunnels in the area.
Investigations are ongoing, and Mexican authorities have reiterated their commitment to shutting down illegal routes along the border. For Cesar Contreras in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, Veronica Villafañe, VOA News.
We've reported here before about the countries in the Sahel, the part of Africa just south of the Sahara Desert. Countries there have recently experienced a raft of coups and popular uprisings. Western powers, notably the United States and France, have been asked to leave as they're struggling to maintain anti-terror operations in the region.
In Chad, hundreds of civilians lost their jobs following the departure of French troops and are asking the government to hire them and provide the job benefits that they used to have. Moki Edwin Kinzeka filed this report from neighboring Cameroon, narrated for us by Scott Walterman.
Chadian officials say hundreds of civilians who were employed by the French assembled in the capital on Monday to ask the government to immediately give them jobs. French forces departed Chad at the order of the Central African States President, Field Marshal Mohamed Idriss Deby. The last French troops left the country on Friday after handing over the Kosse military base in N'Djamena, which they had occupied for 70 years. Earlier, French forces handed over two other bases at Fahalajo and Abicha. The former workers mostly held jobs in hospitals, schools, and dining facilities that served the French troops. Others provided humanitarian assistance to those who lived around the bases. Aziz Mohamed Salih is a member of the Chadian Commission overseeing the dismantling of military agreements between Paris and N'Djamena. He's also Chad's former communications minister and government spokesman. He says Chad's president, Field Marshal Mohamed Idriss Deby, ordered the commission to make a census of all civilians who work with French troops at the three bases, and says after the census, the commission will propose a list of workers whose services are needed to the government of Chad for recruitment. Mohammed spoke on Chad's state TV. He said Deby has asked health and humanitarian workers to continue working in hospitals formerly controlled by French troops. He said he was pleading with the former workers to have confidence in their government, which he said was doing everything possible to protect their rights and provide jobs despite the difficult economic situation that the country is facing. The workers said under the French, they earned an average salary of more than $130 per month. Before leaving Chad last week, General Pascal Inne, the commander of French forces in Africa, told Chadian State TV that their departure was abrupt. Paris has not said anything concerning the former workers. The workers said the decision to order out the French may have been patriotic for the government, but it has undermined their well-being and did not take into consideration the needs of several thousand civilians who had health care and education thanks to the French troops' presence. For Moki Edwin Kinzika in Cameroon, I'm Scott Walterman, VOA News.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.